morning, El Cab versus Dunkin' Donuts.
Morning, Your Honor. Robert Habib. I am attorney for the appellant. The appellant is Waleed El Khatib. Since this was a matter decided on summary judgment, let me address a few undisputed facts. Mr. El Khatib has been a Dunkin' Donuts franchisee since 1979. Since 1984, Dunkin' Donuts has put forth a product called breakfast sandwiches, which includes pork. Between 1979 and 2002, Mr. El Khatib was never required to sell the pork products, yet he remained throughout this entire time a successful Dunkin' Donuts franchisee. In 2002, Mr. El Khatib was offered another chance to expand his business. At this point, he owned two franchises, and he was about to be given this award, in effect, when he was asked whether or not he would sell pork products. He stated he could not sell pork products, but at the same time, he was willing to sell what they call halal meat. Subsequently, within a few weeks, we received a letter from the Boston headquarters of Dunkin' Donuts informing us that because we refused to sell pork products, we would be denied expansion and our two franchises would be subject at this point to non-renewal. We then brought this action pursuant to Section 1981 and Section 1982. We argued, in effect, that Mr. El Khatib is an Arab, that he chooses this point because of his nationality, his race at this point. He is not selling these pork products along these lines.
Well, is it because he's an Arab or because he's Muslim?
I think at this point both the religious and the racial overlap, and I think that was the substance at this point, that we, in effect, we have the same situation.
Was there evidence presented to the district court indicating that Dunkin' Donuts perceived the objection to pork to be religious in nature?
Dunkin' Donuts gave us a flat letter simply stating, because you refuse to sell pork products at this point, you are not eligible for expansion of your franchise, and your franchises, when the period of time comes to an end, will not be renewed.
Now, let me just ask you something else that I was interested in. You stated that Dunkin' Donuts supplied signs for the store in 1998.
Yes.
That stated, you know, meat products not available. Between 1998 and 2002, was there any further communication with Dunkin' Donuts indicating a change in their policy regarding stores and the carrying of meat products?
No. During this period of time, as a Dunkin' Donuts franchisee, Mr. El Khatib, and I attached his exhibits in response to the motion for summary judgment, was continually evaluated by his district supervisors. He was given throughout good evaluations that he sold Dunkin' Donuts products for service, et cetera. During this time, as a Dunkin' Donuts franchisee, he buys his, so we'll call it his wholesale products from a Dunkin' Donuts warehouse. They knew both that he did not sell the pork products. They knew he was not selling the breakfast sandwiches. And they knew at this point he was not buying the pork products that would be contained in the warehouses. So this, frankly, came just as a bolt out of the blue. And just to go on at this point, and this was a point we argued strongly in the summary judgment issue, there are other Dunkin' Donuts franchisees who are not Arab who are permitted not to sell the breakfast sandwiches. And we argued this case in using the McDonnell-Douglas standard at this point that obviously here we should have had somebody who was in a protected class, that he was being subjected at this point to an adverse action at this point when they said you cannot expand and we will not renew your franchise. And at the same time, there was at least three other franchisees at this point, which Dunkin' Donuts admitted, that were not, which were permitted, in effect, not to sell the pork products. And, in effect, one of them renewed their franchise during this entire period of time. And we also...
What was the reason they were permitted to sell?
The three listed reasons that Dunkin' Donuts pointed out and that we argued in Mr. El Khatib's affidavit were really nonsense was, one was a store in which the landlord, at the time he gave the store a lease, specifically put an item in the lease that he did not have to, that he could not sell meat products, as I think it would have competed with another merchant in the area. The second was a store that was on Devon Avenue and was held since they had a largely, since they claimed they were kosher at this point, they would not have to sell the pork products. And the third was a store in which it was claimed that it was too small, the way it was set up at this point, to allow for the sale of the pork products. And quite frankly, one thing Mr. Al-Khatib does know after 23 years, 25 years in the business is, you know, what the situation with the stores. And we pointed out in our affidavit, we actually photographed that store, which they said was too small, and said that was nonsense. The store has plenty of room to sell. We pointed out in the arguments under the lease at this point, if your policy is to require everybody to sell the pork products as part of being a franchisee, why do you allow your franchisee to enter into a lease agreement with a landlord specifically stating you would not sell it? And we pointed out the whole argument in terms of the kosher was really simply based on hearsay. There had been no studies done. It was simply done as an accommodation to that particular franchisee.
Can you respond to the company's argument that it didn't waive any rights under future contracts?
Two arguments at that point. One, I would point out this, in effect, we are suing under 1981 and 1982, and cases which have held waiver and non-waiver have really dealt with that issue. And I think at this point, given the fact this was a civil rights question, the whole waiver argument should be looked at in a different light. But two, under Illinois law and under the RoboServe decision this court has come down with, while non-waiver clauses are usually enforced, they can be overcome with clear and convincing evidence. Now, we're just at the summary judgment stage at this point. We've got a franchisee who's been in business for 23 years up to that point. In fact, he still has one franchise with Dunkin' Donuts. And he is still in business. All this time, he is a successful franchisee. All this time, he is paying his royalties. He is getting good evaluations. Dunkin' Donuts knows he is not selling the pork products. Every time he gets a new franchise at this point, it requires a pretty huge capital investment on his part as far as investing in the products, investing in the facilities, et cetera. And now, for the first time, they are claiming at this point, well, we never waived our right. And, you know, that item about the 1998, when his own district manager comes along and puts up signs, in effect crosses out the signs, meat products or whatever it was, and meat products are not sold, I don't think you can get more clear and convincing evidence of a waiver than that. So as far as Dunkin' Donuts' position, well, we have a non-waiver clause. First of all, in regard to those three non-Arab franchisees, they were not enforcing the argument, you know, as far as the pork products. Second, in the case of his 23 years of operation as a Dunkin' Donuts franchisee, not only did they know about it, that he was not selling the pork products, but they also cooperated with him. As far as the thing about the management and actually helping them put up the signs, the meat products are not available. So we're looking at this thing on a summary judgment issue. And to say there was no issue as a material fact that he could not sue under 1981, that he had that there had not been a waiver by Dunkin' Donuts of whatever clause they had in there, and to argue at this point that the reasons Dunkin' Donuts was given for allowing the other three franchisees not to be discriminatory in effect, not to be a pretext for discrimination, I think for summary judgment purposes was nonsense. And it's going back to this basic issue, because Judge Norgel, in his opinion, came right off the bat, said bluntly this: as far as I'm concerned, this is a claim for religious discrimination. And frankly, I didn't make the law on Section 1981. The Supreme Court, in effect, made the law with its decisions in the 1980s when it specifically stated we are going to look at the question of race as the way the question of race was looked at in 1870. And in 1870, the Irish were considered a separate race, the Germans were considered a separate race, the Jews were considered a separate race, and the Arabs definitely in 1870 would have been considered a separate race distinct from white people in the United States.
Are all Arabs Muslim?
All Arabs, obviously, are not Muslim. And again, for Judge Norgel at this point, in effect, out of the blue, to come out and say, hey, I looked at a website, and it says, which I quite frankly believe is very inaccurate, that 75% of all Arabs at this point in the United States are Christian, in effect, that was a surprise, to put it mildly, when this is the way he wrote the opinion, because he just said right off the bat, you have a claim for religious discrimination. He quotes from the Koran. He quotes from the book of Leviticus. And he comes off at that point and says that. Now, If we had gone to trial, maybe the Dunkin' Donuts could have proved at this point we didn't have a claim for religious discrimination. It's simply for, a claim for racial discrimination. It's a claim for religious discrimination. But we didn't have that, especially when we've got Judge Norgel simply coming out on his own and saying, I looked at the website. The website says at this point 75% to 80% of all Arabs in the United States are really Christian. And while, frankly, I strongly doubt the accuracy, the fact is, for the district court to base his opinion and simply say at this point, therefore your claim can't be really considered racial discrimination, religious discrimination, I think flies in the face of summary judgment law, and I also think it flies in the face of the Supreme Court decisions interpreting Section 1981.
Thank you, Mr. Hobby.
Thank you.
Mr. Buck.
May it please the Court, my name is Jonathan Buck, and I represent the appellee Dunkin' Donuts in this matter. The District Court properly granted summary judgment on Mr. El-Khatib's claims of racial discrimination. The statements made by Mr. El-Khatib's counsel today highlight the fact that what he is challenging is the business judgment of Dunkin' Donuts. In this case, the District Court found that there were at least three reasons that summary judgment was appropriate. First, Mr. El-Khatib failed to establish a prima facie case of discrimination under the burden-shifting framework set forth in McDonnell Douglas. Second, Dunkin' Donuts presented a legitimate, non-discriminatory reason for its decision. And third, Mr. El-Khatib did not present sufficient evidence to establish that Dunkin' Donuts' stated decision was pretextual.
How can we say there's no genuine issue as to whether the reason is pretextual when the selling of sandwiches was never a problem to Dunkin' Donuts before this time, and it still is not a problem with respect to the other franchises that were identified? And Dunkin' Donuts hasn't pointed to any change in corporate policy to explain the sudden change. I mean, isn't the fact that Dunkin' Donuts provided signs that meat was not available evidence that the situation was fairly common and accepted, and therefore that the reason that has been given is pretextual?
No, Your Honor. The sign that was discussed was a sign that was actually crossed out by a lower-level employee of Dunkin' Donuts a number of years earlier. The decision that was made when the vice president of operations of Dunkin' Donuts became involved in discussions regarding this policy. And one important thing to consider here is the fact that when Dunkin' Donuts expressed its intention and its decision to Mr. El-Khatib in August of 2002, it explicitly agreed to honor all existing franchise agreements that the parties had. So the decision was made with respect to future agreements that the parties might have entered into. And to suggest that that alone is evidence of pretext would suggest that a company can never issue a change of decision to someone that is a racial minority without risking a claim of discrimination. One other additional point is that you don't reach the question of pretext under McDonnell Douglas if the plaintiff is unable to establish a prima facie case of discrimination. And here, the district court found that there were two reasons that they did not establish a prima facie case. The first is that Mr. El-Khatib was unable to identify similarly situated employees that were treated differently.
Aren't you really arguing that the other persons must be identically situated? Why should it matter what reasons the other owners had for not serving the sandwiches? Isn't the point that others who didn't serve the full line of products were nevertheless allowed to keep their franchises? Isn't that the point?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. This court has held on numerous occasions on summary judgment that in order to be similarly situated for purposes of the McDonnell Douglas test, you must be comparable in all material respects and there not be differentiating or mitigating circumstances that warrant the different treatment. Here we're talking about parties that are in contractual relationships with each other in a commercial businesses.
Look, he identified three other owners who did not carry the meat or did not carry breakfast sandwiches at all, who were treated differently. for the life of me, I can't understand why it would matter that they each had different reasons for refusing to carry the sandwiches. The level of symmetry is not required for the... I mean, that level of symmetry is not required for a similarly situated test. I'm just having a problem here.
This court has, on numerous occasions, in Radu versus Kimberly-Clark, in Sartor versus Spheron, they have upheld the district court's decision of non-similarly situated individuals when there are circumstances such as different experience, different decisions. Here,
This is about the same term. I mean, and weren't these other franchises all under agreements requiring them to sell all Dunkin' Donuts products?
They were.
Weren't they under an identical kind of agreement?
They would have been substantially similar, yes.
Well, not...
The agreements
were identical, basically. Weren't they supposed to sell all Dunkin' Donut products, the three?
The agreements would have had similar provisions, yes.
Right. So, I mean, that to me is the heart of what the similarity is. That was that same provision. They all got the variance, and he didn't. And you have these years of him operating in that way. So I have the same fundamental problem that Judge Rovner has, because I think they've shown that the three stores were similarly situated.
Well, a couple points on the similarly situated. One is that it is questionable whether there's sufficient evidence in the record to even identify the racial composition of these three other store owners.
Doesn't matter. At least two of the owners could have eliminated the obstacle by moving to a different location in the same area, but Dunkin' Donuts didn't require that of them. Mr. Al-Khabi has satisfied the first part of the test.
I think your point there regarding a potential move is an important one. These are Dunkin' Donuts owners that were willing to sell the complete line of Dunkin' Donuts products absent some commercial reason. Here, in fact, two of the three store owners that were identified by Mr. Al-Khatib were in other stores selling the complete line of Dunkin' Donuts products. So these were not situations where these store owners were similarly situated in that they were requesting an accommodation due to a personal custom or belief.
It seems to me that you have a very narrow reading of the term similarly situated. They don't have to be identically situated.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. However, what Mr. Al-Khatib's claims are founded on here is the idea that he's going to try to look behind the business judgments of Dunkin' Donuts in order to set forth his claim because he believes that there may have been some discrimination in the decision. However, this court has held first on numerous occasions, we won't look at the business judgments of a company in that way unless there is compelling evidence or circumstantial evidence of discrimination that warrants an inference that a decision was made for a discriminatory motive. Here, other than the decision itself and these three other individuals that we've discussed, there is no other information or evidence in the record that would suggest that Dunkin' Donuts' decision was in any way motivated by discriminatory intent.
This is summary judgment. This is summary judgment.
Well, actually,
just as Mr. Habib started out his argument.
I understand that, Your Honor. Discovery had been closed. There is no further discovery in the lower court that will take place. So the factual record is what it is and is quite complete for purposes of what we will see at the trial. In addition, outside of the similarly situated, we have the issue under the prima facie case that Mr. Al-Khatib was not and had indicated he would refuse to comply with the contractual obligations that might be put in contracts in the future, and that is another independent basis of finding that he failed to present the prima facie case of discrimination under McDonnell Douglas. In addition, the district court found, and I do believe it's proper, to conclude that Dunkin' Donuts' stated reason for its decision was legitimate and non-rational. They had a franchisee that had indicated his unwillingness to comply with his contractual obligations, comply with the obligations that he would have under future contracts. Dunkin' Donuts allowed him to continue under the current franchise agreements, but stated that for business reasons and their interest in moving forward with the franchise relationship, because he refused to comply with those obligations, they were not going to renew or relocate his franchise.
I want to go back to a factual matter. You said that, and we know that that sign was put there about what the store didn't sell, and you said a lower-level Dunkin' Donut employee put that on there. But weren't there reviews of his stores? Weren't there inspections where other, for years where that sign was there? So clearly Dunkin' Donuts had accepted that.
Your Honor, clearly there were individuals within the Dunkin' Donuts network that were aware, right, or should have, could have been aware of this issue. That is, with respect to the waiver issue, again, we're talking about future contracts and a business stating its policy years in advance of the natural termination of Mr. El-Khatib's franchise agreements, one of which is still in place. Here, the district court found that Mr. El-Khatib had failed to present a prima facie case of discrimination because these other employees or other franchise owners were not similarly situated, that he was unable to comply with his contractual obligations, and he was unable to establish that Dunkin' Donuts' stated reasons were pretextual. Accordingly, Dunkin' Donuts would request that this court affirm the decision of summary judgment granting dismissal of Mr. El-Khatib's claims of racial discrimination.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.